This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us. 877-217-5757 is your number. Ali Baltazar is producing, and we lead off with the fabulous Kenny Neal, one of the great American blues artists, guitar player, singer, and band member, comes from the famous musical family, the Neals, and has often performed with his brothers, and he's had quite a year and in many ways. But before we get there, Kenny Neal, last week at this time, when we opened the microphone exactly 1 week ago, we were talking about the death of Antoine Fats Domino. And you, being born in 1957, right at the height of Fats's power, had to be influenced by this man.
Very, very much. I remember my dad brought a piano home he bought from the church when I was a little kid. And the first song I learned how to play was Blueberry Hill. That was it. That was my song. Once I learned to play it, every time we had company, my mom would say, come and play that song for us. And then we went on to Hello, Josephine, and Shame, Shame, Shame. He was a big influence, big impact on my life and my career.
And many others.
Yes. Yes, all around here. My dad, Rafael Neal, as well. And, you know, I end up knowing Fats well over the years after my career took off, and he was quite the gentleman and would always come out to the jazz festival and come backstage and say hello to the band. You know, he just was a nice guy.
He was not a guy with an electric personality, a nice guy, but to have had the success he did, a humble man.
Really, really humble, you know. And he was like that all the time. That just was his nature. But when you get to know him, you know, he'll come back and just come in to check on you, young man. How you doing, you know? Everything been okay? And, you know, it was like that. He'd be all dressed in white with his white cap on, real clean, and come back and say hello. And we always used to think that was so nice of him to do that, you know.
We're hearing the distinctive voice of Kenny Neal. If you'd like to talk with Kenny, 877-217-5757, 877-217-5757, or 297-5633 in Baton Rouge, or you can send an email to talk@talklouisiana.org. Kenny's been doing this for a long time. He was born in Irwinville, and last month, as in the 14th of October, you celebrated a big day.
Yeah, 60 years old, and I celebrated it in the south of France. I just happened to be doing a concert there in Nancy, France this year.
That's not a bad place to be, is it?
They gave me a big warm welcome, and it was birthday cakes and candles on stage. It was great. We had a great time. Mm-hmm. And it's just funny how time slips away. Like on my new CD, I recorded that song from Willie Nelson, and it really slipped by me. You know, I woke up and here I am 60 years old now.
You know. Well, you had quite a year as far as getting appreciation from the masses. That's always desirable.
Oh, it was great. Being nominated for the Grammy for the Bloodline, and also we won a Contemporary Blues CD of the Year for the Memphis Blues Awards, and also Artist of the Year. So I had a great year.
Yeah, you've got a lot of years left. There's no doubt that it's 60. This is not the end. In many ways, it's probably the middle of your career. But I do recall probably 11 years ago, you went away for a little while.
Yeah, I went off to Palo Alto about 13 years back. And I lived out on the West Coast, and which I was still touring a lot. But, you know, over in the Silicon Valley for that length of time. And it was a good run. But then I decided, let me get back to my roots and come back and enjoy my family. And my mom is right up the street from me now, and all my brothers, my siblings, and it's just great. I'm happy to be back on my turf.
Do you ever get tired of it?
No. When I hit the stage, it make all the traveling worthwhile to see people leave singing my songs and happy and, you know, sharing stories with my fans and, you know, doing the pictures. And it's, I love what I do, so it don't feel like work.
Well,
and these days I'm kind of picking and choosing, so I do mostly theaters and the festivals, and you know, they're kind of in and out. It's not like when I used to do the nightclubs from night after night and hanging out all night long. It's a little different now.
Well, at 60 years old, if you have the life that Fats Domino did, Kenny, you'll be going until you're 89. Of course, the last decade, he didn't do a whole lot, but your voice is still strong, and you still do it quite a bit. How many performances per year do you have on the average?
Well, this year coming up, I think I'll do about 200 dates.
208?
200.
Wow.
This year coming up.
Now that...
Because I took off for a couple of years, and this year was a great comeback. And next year, I'm into next year already, so I got to buckle down and get ready.
Kenny Neal is our guest, and Ali Baltazar has chosen one of Kenny's classics. If you've never heard this man, you really missed something. He is one of the best, and of course, he's a Louisiana treasure, performs in his home state quite frequently. Here is the remarkable Kenny Neal.
Whistle blowing a little after four. When blues fall down like rain, I can't eat, I can't sleep. Late at night I hear my guitar weep. Oh, baby. When blues fall down like rain, I never meant to let you go. God knows I love you so. I never meant to do you wrong. Before I knew it, baby, oh baby, you was gone. Blues fall down like rain.
Now, Kenny, a listener asks about your acting career. You've done some of that as well in a big way.
Yeah, made it to Broadway, all the way from Louisiana to New York, bright light, big city. it happened, Zora Neale Hurston and Langston Hughes wrote the play back in the 30s, and they lost that play for some reason or not, a little squabble they had on who owned it, so it got lost. They went to court, and they found it somewhere around 1989, and they put 27 people in the cast, and they was looking for this one younger guy who knew about the blues, and I didn't have any experience in acting, so I flew up to New York. Taj Mahal recommended that they contact me here, and they did. I flew up and read for the part and just said, on my way back to Louisiana, I go, well, I went and did it, my thing, but I don't think I'll get it. And 2 weeks later, I got the lead role in a Broadway show called Mewbone. So the Lincoln Center sent me to school and took intensive coaching lessons and acting, and went to Broadway and did well and won the Theater World Award for the most outstanding newcoming actor. I never dreamed of doing something like that.
Well, what
it was a great experience.
Yeah, it was memorable too. But what's next for Kenny, for you?
To put me a studio here in Baton Rouge pretty soon, and start scouting for all of the young talent that we have here in Baton Rouge, and I'll sit in the captain's seat and produce these kids and send them out and let them go and experience the world like I have.
Well, you have had an amazing voyage that continues, and it's wonderful that you have this passion that endures.
Yeah, thank you so much. We have to give back, and I'm looking forward to it.
Kenny Neal, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate it.
And we'll be back with more of Talk Louisiana on WRKF after this brief pause of 90 seconds. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us. 877-217-5757. Kevin Cope is with us. And coming Thursday, the former head of the LSU Faculty Senate for a decade will be hosting, along with others, a major higher education forum, The Future of Louisiana. It's Thursday night at the Claiborne Conference Center, 1201 North 3rd Street in Baton Rouge, the Louisiana Purchase Room. And what's going to happen come Thursday, Kevin Cope?
Well, Jim, this is a first in the history of faculty engagement with higher education policy. For many years, when the news media wanted to find out what's going on in the universities, or when the people wanted to have input, they had to run directly to the leadership. But, of course, the great body of competence is with the faculty, so we are setting up our own forums around the state in places like Lake Charles, Lafayette, Natchitoches, Grambling, you name it. And the chief of them is going to be this show right here in Baton Rouge with at least three or four panelists that include Representative Denise Marcel, LSU Student Body President Jason Batto, a couple of faculty members, and some folks from the governor's office or the governor's executive branch.
Well, it's something that is important. We've had all these cuts to higher education over the last several years, and the cuts did not happen this year, but there's a lot of restoration to be done. How much damage has been done to colleges and universities in our state over the last decade?
That is one area in which Louisiana has set a record, both absolutely and proportionally. Louisiana over the last 8 or 9 years has taken the highest cut in the funding in the history of American higher education. This has run upwards of 40% with regard to the state appropriation, and it has had devastating consequences. We've done the best to keep the ship running and provide education for students, but just take a look at the buildings, look at the grounds, and you'll see that it's in a sorry, sorry condition.
Well, it's Thursday, November 2nd, 6 p.m. That's coming very soon, as we know. And Kevin Cope is a man who has passion for what he does. A decade as faculty senate president. You've given that assignment to another gentleman.
That's right. You were kind enough to credit me with organizing it. But in fact, this forum is being organized by my successor, Kenneth McMillan. And I should also add that the forum is going to be moderated by no less than Jim Engster, the vivacious voice of elegant controversy in Louisiana.
Vivacious voice of elegant controversy. I think we need to market that. But thank you for the kind words. And that'll be tomorrow. Well, it'll be Thursday at 6 p.m. at the Claiborne Center in Baton Rouge. That's right across the street from the old hospital, the first Our Lady of the Lake, where Huey Pierce Long died on the 10th of September, 1935. But hopefully nobody will die on Thursday night.
Well, that's it. They'll only die in the old sense that comics used to say, hey, I'm dying out there on the stage. But I think we're all going to come out of this better and more vital than ever before.
Well, what's happening regarding the controversy over this $85 million expenditure for a spruced-up rec center at LSU? $85 million.
Yeah, that controversy seems to have real legs, if legs are appropriate, where it's swimming rather than jogging, that's an issue. There have been a couple more editorials in just this past week, and those in newspapers around the nation. And this just shows what happens when you don't use expertise. That's what we're trying to do at that forum tomorrow night, is use faculty expertise. Well, the folks who were in the leadership didn't do enough research. They did not consult enough people, enough in the way of faculty members. And look what has happened. The university's got a big tar mark right on its, we won't call it rear end, we'll call it its leading edge.
Well, $85 million is enough that probably we could have restored the library, could have had a new Middleton Library or whatever they want to call it. And there's been a lot of concern about buildings that are crumbling at LSU. And yet, right over on Sorority Row, a decision was made to use student fees to spruce up the rec center. It's a beautiful place, but was that money well spent in your judgment?
In my judgment, that was far from the best expenditure. Now, I know all of the arguments that the students were called on to make decisions, to decide how they wanted to use their money. But then you have to ask the question, well, what kind of university culture is it where the students choose a playground rather than a refurbished library? Indeed, $85 million, you're quite correct, would just about pay for the complete renovation, not only of Middleton Library, but what of our master plan calls the World Communications Center.
Uh-huh. Well, I remember when John McKithen built the Superdome and was criticized mightily for the cost, and of course we're talking more than 40 years ago, but it was $159 million, I believe, and that was considered to be wildly extravagant, and that was for the Superdome, the most prominent building in the state of Louisiana, arguably. $85 million for a building that's not that old, is it?
No, that's right. And I believe that the renovated recreation center was maybe 10 or 12 years old. And look at those numbers you just cited. That is $85 million. Well, you take a little inflation into that. Let's just say that that would have paid for a quarter of the Superdome. A quarter of the Superdome and a quarter of the revenue that goes with it would have gone a whole lot farther than the revenue that comes out of kiddies splashing around the middle of the alphabet.
And I think the Assembly Center was built in 1971 for about $15 million or less. And so there has been an inflation, no doubt, but $85 million is still real money. That is significant. And it was done through student fees. Who approved the expenditure?
That's a very interesting point. One of the features of modern university administration is that there are so many steps in any decision process that there's always a way to avoid pinning blame on anyone in particular. But when you get down to it, of course, in the last analysis, it's the LSU system office that has to approve anything that the students approve. That is, it's not as though the students can start up a poll or a plebiscite and decide that they're going to build something. Well, suppose they took it into their head build a statue, a great colossus, or monument to Jim Engster. Well, I think the faculty would vote unanimously in favor of it, but you can be sure the LSU system office would get in the way. What happened here?
Well, it's big money, and even with 30,000 students, you'd have to pay a lot of money each semester to get up to $85 million.
Yeah, it looks like they're going to have to pay $135 or so per student for 3 years, I believe it is. That's $400 per student year. People complaining about increase in tuition. Well, I think that increase in fee is significant, perhaps even greater than the increase in the tuition.
$135 a student for 3 years?
I believe that's the number.
And that is that on top of some that have already paid in?
Well, there are other fees, and those other fees are perfectly legitimate. They also result from the underfunding of the university. This might be described as, to use another liquid besides water, a gravy fee. That is, the students have decided to put this on top of everything else. But I would note that these elections are like all other elections in America. Maybe a quarter of the electorate turns out. So it would have been wise for the administration to say, well, maybe this election does not really represent student opinion.
Well, listener notes that a graduate can join the rec center and be a member for $648 a year. That's about what it costs to go to a high-end club in our community. And it is a fabulous place. We've gotten a lot of attention about the Lazy River. Have you seen the Lazy River?
Oh, I've seen it. I've not only seen it in person, I've also seen it on the cover of the Chronicle of Higher Education, where it drew some reaction from the educated community. Well, that's an interesting point. That is, years ago, it was made a matter of law that universities should not compete with private industry. I don't know why they imagined that they should compete with the private fitness industry rather than somebody else. I'm not opposed to people from the community paying, but here again we've got one of these strange hybrid arrangements where it's primarily a student facility, but supposedly some folks from out in the real world are cashing in a little bit and paying too.
Well, it's something that has generated attention and well-deserved attention, and it comes down to a matter of priorities. You're on campus every day. You're at Allen Hall. How is Alan Hall right now?
I can tell you that Alan Hall would not qualify as a lazy river because we don't have any warm water. That's a heated pool over there, at least in the winter. We don't have that. So I would say that Alan Hall, although great intellectual works are done there, don't get me wrong, the colleagues there are doing wondrous things. But on the other hand, it is a septic pit. It is not possible to emerge from Alan Hall in a sanitary condition.
You have some nice murals.
That's an interesting story, isn't it? That is, those murals were once heralded, and then they were covered over with whitewash because they became too politically hot, and now they're back as artifacts. And I wouldn't be surprised in the wake of this Confederate memorial controversy if they run into trouble again.
Really?
Well, yeah, because they've got elements in them that a lot of people consider racist. Now, this has been changed. We say this is part of art history. We have to understand this. But, of course, that's the same argument that was put up for the Confederate monument. So we'll see what happens. Don't get me wrong. I'm not calling for that. I'm just predicting that this, like everything in the history of art, is going to generate another controversy.
We'll be back with more from Kevin Cope after this time out on This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. 877-217-5757. And talk at talklouisiana.org is our email. Stephanie Regal, in her latest column in the Baton Rouge Business Report, writes, a recent issue of the esteemed Chronicle of Higher Education takes LSU to task for a new lazy river, a luxury lounge pool that is the marquee attraction at the University Recreation Center, recently overhauled at a cost of $85 million. The article, entitled The Lure of the River, discusses the proliferation of lazy rivers and other lavish recreational amenities on public university campuses and explains how such high-end attractions are being funded by even steeper student fees at a time when state and federal support for academic programs is dwindling. Now, Stephanie writes that when President F. King Alexander was asked about the Chronicle report, he noted that he talked with a reporter and also noted the $110 million state-of-the-art engineering building, which was not mentioned in the article. And the engineering building is great, but it just goes to show you can get $110 million out there for a new building for engineering, which is one of the major endeavors at LSU, and we spend $85 million for a lazy river.
That's it, Jim. You have to ask, what do you get out of an engineering building? You get innovation. You get invention. You get something new every day. What do you get out of a recreation center? You get what the weightlifters call reps, i.e. repetition, the same old thing, splashing. You get a little bit of stretching and bending and flexing. Maybe that makes you into a good sycophant in the university world, but you're certainly not getting anything near the level of productivity you get from an engineering building.
The voice we're hearing is that of Kevin Cope, the former faculty senate president, still a professor of note, 34 years at LSU. He came here from Harvard University after getting his PhD at that fine institution, and he has stayed. He's not a native of Louisiana, and there are many other stories like Kevin Cope. Our friend Hugh Buckingham, the former linguistics professor, calls it the brain remain, and many professors stay at LSU, and LSU, according to reports, is not alone in spending money for recreational facilities. Is that necessary to attract quality students?
It seems to be, but the question is whether universities really ought to be in the business of attracting or recruiting or, dare I say, selling to students. This arises from the fact that the public has decided, under the influence of neoconservative thought, that the university should seek not students but clients, and this produces a tremendous industry in salesmanship, which is expensive. Every university in this state, indeed just about every university in this nation, has a huge department of people who are paid pretty good salaries, who are charged with going out and finding students. I would say it'd be a whole lot more efficient to give block grants to the university and then let the universities set high admissions requirements and students aspire to them.
Is there any study available on how much students actually use the recreation center?
I am sure that the people in the recreation department keep numbers. However, I would not be completely confident of those numbers. Let's suppose that you've got people who are coming and going. You've got 3,000 students, but maybe only 200 of them are using the recreation center 15 times a day. Well, it looks like everybody's using it, but maybe that's not so.
And it's located a stone's throw from Sorority Row.
That is not an accident. That is, there is social class, there is social hierarchy, there is segregation, and there is class distinction on the LSU campus. That's the reason that it's there, in order to make it convenient to people who are perceived as the future leaders. But I would submit the university should be making everybody a leader, not just those who qualify to get into sorority by some ridiculous hazing ritual.
Well, President Alexander is quoted in Stephanie's column as saying that the new and improved rec center keeps students active and rooted on campus, engaged in healthy lifestyle activities like weightlifting, yoga, floating in an inner tube, and that student visits have doubled from 3,000 to 6,000 per day. So if 6,000 visits, that's significant.
That's big, but if floating in an inner tube can give you physical fitness, I'm about to become the greatest physical specimen on this planet. I like that kind of passive exercise. And also, the question arises, is it the university business to protect students from drinking? I would say that that is not the highest purpose that a university has ever appointed for itself. The goal of the university, as articulated by the Board of Regents, is to be a leader in research, teaching, and service. I didn't know that its purpose was to go and police Freds.
Well, you're sounding like a curmudgeon, Kevin Cope.
Well, that's one of the benefits that come with age. One of these days,
and
a
tenure.
Young man like you
and
will
tenure.
Submit. Yeah, and tenure. Tenure. Well, we're all cowards, aren't we? You know, we have the great courage that safety confers upon us.
Well, that's the great thing about a university. Usually, you're allowed to express what you believe. And I must say LSU in the last year or so has had some volatile speakers on campus, and we haven't had the incidents that we've seen in other places.
Well, that's a good point, isn't it? That is, one way or the other, the university has promoted a fairly open environment. Now, we have had a few free speech controversies related to faculty members who have run into trouble for saying something that's a little too hot. But overall, I'd agree with you, the university is fairly open. However, I would note that some of that may be because in Louisiana, we don't have quite such a open culture of political controversy as you would find in other states.
877-217-5757 is your number. 297-5633 locally, and talk@talklouisiana.org. Kevin Cope is our guest, the always outspoken English professor of 34 years at Louisiana State University. Katie at LSU. Hi, Katie.
Good morning. I was calling just as a reminder. I believe that the rec center was purchased and built by student fees. So any criticism of misspent dollars seems misplaced. It's the students themselves who decided to spend the money on that facility and not the administration.
Well, I think, Katie, you may have missed what we talked about earlier. Yes, we did recognize that the students elected to impose this fee on themselves. However, we have a situation where a small segment of students have imposed the fee on all of them. It was by no means a universal election. And also, there's the question of whether the university, which is running the accounting here, is more blended financially with the project than might seem, and whether the university should have exercised its teaching prerogative and guided the students away from what I regard as a less than optimal decision.
What, Katie, you may know, enables something to be on a student ballot for a vote? For example, a dollar a semester would have saved the Reveille 4 or 5 days a week. $1 a semester would have saved the Reveille, and yet I've never seen in recent time anything on the student ballot involving student media. So what? How do you get something like this up for a vote by the students?
Jim, I'm not in a position to know or understand that, but I think that, you know, having fees or governing dollars misappropriated, or having some groups feel like it should be spent one way and another group feeling that it should be spent another, is certainly nothing new to our democratic society, and it's reflected in our university. Students may choose to support a recreation center. Students may choose to support student media. I would love to see additional support for the arts and student fees going so that everybody could enjoy the museums and music and theater performances for free. But we can't direct how students want to spend their own fees.
But there is some decision on what goes before the students. For example, somebody had to take the initiative to put this before the students for a vote. How did that happen? Do you know?
I believe the students would have come up with those initiatives.
Would it be the Student Government Association? Would that be it?
I'm not in a position to know, but I would hope so.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Katie. Kevin?
Yeah, the Student Government Association does undertake these initiatives. However, I would point out that, once again, the Student Government Organization operates within the canopy of LSU. It is a recognized element in the LSU governance system. And I'd also suggest that the Student Government Association, in this case, has some unfair advantages going. That is, it's got access to property. If Jim Inkster wants to open a recreation center, I doubt that the university is going to make that prime real estate available to do it. So I think it is somewhat misleading to pretend that this is operating simply in an independent realm of democracy. Rather, it is happening on the campus, within the university administrative structure, within the canopy of LSU financial accounting.
But to play devil's advocate, Katie does have a point that the students did vote for this, and $135 a semester is a significant amount for most students.
Well, that's true, but if we're going to run the university through a kind of financial democracy, let's open it up. Let's have students vote on tuition. Let's have students vote on the budget. Let's have students vote on athletic ticket prices. Maybe they'd like to reduce their ticket prices and put the extra charges on the folks who are out there drinking in the parking lot.
All right. When we talk about a student vote, this is basically the Student Government Association voting, right?
That's correct.
It's not the entire student body.
Well, that's an interesting point. I believe that de facto everyone in the student body is considered a member of Student Government Association, but again, it's a distinctive minority.
So how does the vote occur? There are no ballot boxes, are there?
I haven't got the slightest idea. I do know that there are voting
stations. You show up at a meeting, right?
Yeah, you show up at a meeting, yeah.
And we know how that goes when you have these meetings, probably a small minority of students show.
Yeah, exactly.
But it is an amazing structure and a testament to what can be done, and it would be less noticeable if the library were in good shape. But there are holes in the ceiling, and it's a big mess at the library right now.
Again, take a look at the cover of the Chronicle of Higher Education from 2 weeks ago. There you've got an image of indolent youth splashing in a useless swimming pool, but you don't have a picture of the dripping water from the ceiling of the Middleton Library.
877-217-5757, and because of some technical issues, we're going to hold Kevin Cope for another segment. And we'll hear from Tim Federle tomorrow. So thank you for your patience. And if you'd like to join the conversation, this is certainly important with higher education cuts. $85 million. Did the Student Government Association make the right call on a new rec center at LSU for that amount of money? We'll talk about it when we return with Kevin Cope right here on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us, 877-217-5757, for LSU English professor Kevin Cope, 34 years at the Old War School. He has tenure, and because of that, he's probably less reluctant to speak his mind on many matters as he has through the years in various places, including this program. And Kevin Cope is talking about the $85 million new rec center at LSU that student fees are taking care of. King Alexander, the president, says about 6,000 students a day visit this facility, and why not? It is an amazing structure, but there are buildings crumbling on campus, including the one where Kevin Cope teaches at Allen Hall, one of the regal remnants of the quadrangle. Are other buildings like Allen Hall?
Well, that's certainly true. You think about the Huey Long Swimming Pool, for example, which is a legitimate art historical monument, and it is in ruins. If you walk to any building in the quadrangle, you'll see structures that look spectacular from the outside, but once you walk inside, you look like you're in the set for an apocalyptic movie set in about 1929, the day after the stock market crash or whatever. If you wander to what might be called the faubourg of the campus, the apron around it, where all of the utility structures are, you'll actually see what, if I were not disinclined to use a polite language, I would call shacks.
Well, as I noted, and I'm on the student media board, I can tell you the Reveille, which at one time was a five-day-a-week proposition, now one day a week as far as a printed version. It's online every day, but one day a week as far as printed. And this is a newspaper that has a regal history with great people who have gone on to spectacular things in journalism. I was on the staff in 1981, spring of 81. Three members of that staff have won Pulitzer Prizes. That's just one staff. But yet it went to one day a week, and $1 per semester could have saved the Reveille for 5 days a week as a printed newspaper.
That is astounding. The Reveille won prize after prize. I believe at one point it was declared the best student newspaper in the United States, and it certainly was always a great vehicle, to use your phrase, for expressing one's views freely. It indeed did a much better job than one of the other local newspapers, the big one, in exposing a variety of views to a very big readership. I find it astounding that it has simply disappeared into the cyber universe.
One day a week, and it is a newspaper with a spectacular history, including one that stood up to Huey Long when he was governor of Louisiana, and of course ruled the state like a tyrant. And he shut down the newspaper. He says we're not going to have a newspaper at my university attacking me. And he shut it down for a while. Of course, it came back with a vengeance. Kenneth downtown. Kenneth, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, gentlemen. So I just wanted to kind of call and say that while I definitely agree with the sentiment of how monies could better be spent toward educational rather than recreational use, I think that the overall attack of the student body versus the legislative body is the real issue here. The students practice democracy, and they voted, and they chose to use their money. And if that's what they chose to use their money on, you know what? That's on them. But the overall welfare of our university is on the legislature. And it's their responsibility, and it's the responsibility of the citizens of the state to ensure that Middleton isn't crumbling, to ensure that the Reveille survives, to ensure that we have a higher ratio of tenured faculty than we do adjuncts who are just coming in on year-long contracts. These things are the purview of the legislature. And so to focus heavily on the students' use of their student fees, rather than turning the finger and pointing to the legislative body that should be responsible for making sure that the university is what it is supposed to be, I feel is kind of misguided.
Well, I think it is correct to look back to the policy and financing basis of everything that has happened. As I said earlier, we need to find a new way to finance universities that does not make the universities center their effort on student recruitment and student salesmanship. The only point I would disagree is that, again, I think that it's not really the students' own money. That is, this is a fee that's being imposed on students who have yet to come. And indeed, to go back to your point about the legislature, the legislature could have done something to guide this decision. They could have doubled the price of the rent for that facility so that the students would have had to think twice about whether $135 or $270 or maybe $405 per year would be spent. The legislature needs to guide what happens on the campus rather than either persecute the campus or just let chaos run.
A listener asks online, how are the Student Government Association members chosen?
They're chosen by an election, and these elections increasingly are expensive affairs. That is, I do not really believe that just any Joe Schmo on the street can get together a campaign for Student Government Association president. You've got to have some kind of backing. You've got to have campaign organization. Okay. So these are increasingly highly professionalized undertakings.
Marie asks, why, Dr. Cope, are you objecting to the rec center after it was built? Why didn't you get out there in front when this was going on?
I'll tell you, I've been faculty senate president for 10 years, and I have objected to just about everything that could be objected to, including that. And I was privy to some of the discussions. I raised objections, but of course, you don't always carry the day.
877-217-5757. Lisa on Choctaw. Hi, Lisa. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. Quick question. I don't know if there's any way to actually calculate this. I'm just curious in terms of the students who voted for this fee that, as you said, their money, they're paying this fee. How many of those students are receiving TOPS and other state assistance for tuition?
All right. Well, most of the LSU student body is on TOPS.
Most of LSU has a disproportionate number of TOPS recipients. But, because it's a merit-based institution.
Oh, yeah, and the admission requirements are higher than those of TOPS, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. The higher the admissions requirements, the more TOPS, and, of course, LSU has the highest admission requirements in the state. So I think you can say a lot of the students are receiving TOPS.
But when you get TOPS, are student fees included? Does the scholarship include student fees?
I am not enough of an expert in all of those subtleties. I think not, but I do not know for sure.
Well, that's an important distinction, because if they are included, then the taxpayers are paying for this.
Well, that's so, and some have argued that perhaps the money is just shuttled around. That is, the economic liberty that comes from having TOPS lets you vote for a fee.
All right, but I don't know, and if somebody's out there who does know, that is an important distinction. Do student fees include TOPS money? 877-217-5757. We still have time to get in with Kevin Cope, Diego at LSU. Hi, Diego.
Hi, I'm a student at LSU, and I can tell you personally, I've never visited the UREC, and I spend like almost every day in Middleton. So I was just wondering, you were talking about like maybe the legislature getting block grants out. How could that, how would the administration at LSU like finance it to where it goes more towards like student, like, because not all students were the ones that were voting for the UREC. Like, I'm a freshman this year, and I didn't even know about the UREC until I got there. So could you answer that possibly?
Sure. Thank you, Diego, for injecting some facts into the discussion. If the university were financed by block grants, then the university would instantly no longer need to make the recruitment of students its priorities. That then would allow the university to focus on exactly what you're talking about, on the academic infrastructure of the university. As it stands now, an enormous effort must go into recruiting students. But if we change the way that that is financing, the administration, which is opportunistic and wants to look good in the public, would instantly change its priorities.
Carolyn at LSU. Hi, Carolyn. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Hi. I'm a current LSU student, and I'm receiving TOPS. And I just wanted to say that no, TOPS does not cover student fees. I pay about $800 a semester in fees. Maybe that's per year. I can't exactly remember. But I had a question regarding the rec center.
All right. Well, that's. I'm glad you clarified that, because that is an important distinction, and that means that no taxpayer money is involved in this rec center. But keep going. What's on your mind, Carolyn?
I was told by a university professor that things like the rec center and the dormitories are under a 50-year lease, and they're supposed to pay themselves off well before that 50-year lease and make money after that. Is that true?
There are arrangements of that kind for many university facilities. I don't know all the details for the rec center, but there again, paying themselves off depends on collecting that fee. So if what you say, Carolyn, is true, now we're up to another 47 years of students who are going to have to pay for what 3 years of students voted on.
Well, tomorrow night at 6 o'clock at the Claiborne Building downtown, not on the LSU campus. This is one of those new buildings that came up during the Mike Foster years, beautiful facility. Louisiana Purchase Room, appropriately, there will be a discussion about higher education in Louisiana, and I'll be moderating, and Kevin Cope will be there along with many other faculty luminaries, including the new Faculty Senate President, Kenneth McMillan. So I look forward to seeing many of you tomorrow evening at the Claiborne Building, 6 o'clock Thursday night, and it is free and open to the public.
Thank you very much, Jim. We look forward to your expert moderation.
Thank you, Dr. Kevin Cope. And we're back tomorrow, same time, same place. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned.
For a podcast of today's show, go to WRKF.org or find the Talk Louisiana podcast on the WRKF app. We welcome your feedback and topic suggestions. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Talk Louisiana is a production of WRKF in Baton Rouge.